Greetings and a warm welcome to another edition of The Debate, coming your way from Press TV headquarters in Tehran. I'm your host, Behrouz Najafi. Welcome to the show. The Hamas Islamic Resistance Movement has marked its 31st anniversary in a rally attended by some 500,000 Palestinians in the Gaza Strip. The resistance movement was founded in 1987 when it won a parliamentary victory following the first uprising or intifada against the Israeli occupation. Since the first intifada, also known as the Stone Uprising, Hamas has fought against Israel both militarily and by holding protest rallies. To the great dismay of Tel Aviv, the resistance movement has been further bolstered, its foundations and also withstood the Israeli aggression ever more strongly. Now, what's been responsible for the resilience of the Palestinians? What will be the fate of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict? Any solutions in sight? Now let's start by getting an update from our correspondent in Gaza, Ashraf Shannon. Ashraf, over to you.
Yes, Behrouz, since the early hours of the morning and even since last night, hundreds of thousands of people attended a celebration to mark Hamas's 31st anniversary since its founding back in 1987, which also coincided with the first Palestinian Intifada or popular uprising. Everywhere you look around you today, throughout the streets of Gaza, you see tens of thousands of green flags of that's the banner of the flag of Hamas all over the Gaza Strip, as people in convoys, cars, and buses were making their way into the center of Gaza City to mark this occasion. Well, speaking to people, most of them say that the reason they support Hamas is that Hamas has adhered to armed resistance against Israel since its outset, and also refuses to recognize the Israeli regime, and refuses to cede an inch of any or a grain of sand of Palestine to Israel. And what also made this a very special occasion is that people in Gaza have been holding rallies for more than 8.5 months now as part of the Great March of Return peaceful protests, in which over 200 peaceful protesters were killed and thousands more were injured. During his address to the crowd today, Hamas's political bureau chief Ismail Haniyeh stressed that the so-called deal of the release of the thousands of Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails, and also extended a hand to the Palestinian Authority and Fatah movement for unity. And he also thanked the Arab and Islamic nations who support the Palestinian people, mainly Iran, for their support.
Okay, thank you for that update. That was Ashraf Shen, our correspondent, who joined us from Gaza City. Let me now introduce our guests who are joining me in this debate today. We'll have Mike Harris, who is an editor of Veterans Today, joining us from St. Louis, and also Catherine Shachtman, fellow with Bayan Center for Studies from London. Now, thank you both for joining us in this debate. Let me start with Mike. 31 years passed since the first Intifada or Palestinian uprising, and Palestinians are still putting a fierce resistance against the Israeli occupation, even more powerfully than they did in the past. Well, this, I'm sorry, this many people believe is a failure for Tel Aviv that boasts of its military prowess, isn't it?
Well, the one thing that the Israelis have succeeded in, and they have succeeded in unifying the Palestinian people everywhere, not just in Gaza, not just in Israel, but in Jordan and Lebanon, everywhere the Palestinians are united with the desire to retake Palestine. And expel the Israelis. This was an illegal invasion that was imposed upon them against their will. The British negotiated this and gave away land that they didn't own. And this is the bottom line. Israel has done a masterful job hardening the will and the determination of the Palestinian people. And the harder the Israelis press on the Palestinians, the more resistant they become, the more unified they become, and the more resolve that they develop as a people to take back their homeland.
All right, let's go to Catherine Shakdam. Hamas senior official Ismail Haniyeh has promised in the ceremony today that Palestinians will not allow the so-called deal of the century to take effect. And what's wrong with the deal of the century?
Well, the deal of the century is very good indeed for Israel, not so much for the Palestinians. And I think that, you know, of course, Hamas standing for, you know, Palestinian resistance wants to see this deal aborted before it can actually take shape, because it doesn't make sense whatsoever. It's very one-sided, it's very prejudiced against the Palestinians, it denies them their very existence and their tradition. Of course, no Palestinians in their right mind would actually agree to it, let alone abide by it. So it makes sense for Hamas to oppose it, of course. I think what is important to remember is that, you know, this ability that the Hamas has had to unite all Palestinians, regardless of their political standing, I would say, or religious belief, is that, you know, there's with the Hamas stands the idea of resistance against oppression. And I think it's very important today. And I think that Israel fails to understand that it has nothing to do with politics per se, but more to do with an idea, a philosophy that, you know, people were born free and therefore have the right to stand in their land. And when this land is occupied, then they have the right and obligation to resist. And I think that this is one of the main reasons why Hamas is not only thriving, but has managed to actually endure decades of oppression and propaganda against its, not just its leadership, but even the formulation of its policy and its standing. So it's something that I think we need to address, because very often it's been portrayed as a, you know, terror organization by the likes of Israel or even Washington. And people have tried to play the sectarian card as well, arguing that it is a Sunni resistance movement. I think it goes beyond that. It has to do with, you know, it speaks for the Palestinians as a whole, as a people, not just as a particular, you know, ethnicity or even school of thought and religion.
Okay, let me also put the same question to Mike. You know, some observers even go further and say that this so-called deal of the century is an Israeli wish list. Do you agree with that?
Well, yes, I do. And the problem that the U.S. has with trying to broker a deal is because of such rampant Israeli influence in U.S. politics, both foreign and domestic, the U.S. is no longer viewed as an honest broker. The U.S. is viewed as an Israeli puppet. And until the U.S. can take an objective stance and begin to give consideration to the needs of the Palestinian people instead of just the wish list of the Israelis, there's not going to be any progress. There's no reason for anyone to take the U.S. serious in their efforts, because, as I said, the U.S. is not viewed as an honest broker. We've got the American-Israeli Public Affairs Committee, which makes, you know, they try to get every U.S. politician elected to the federal level, Congress, Senate, to take a pledge of loyalty to Israel, which is, number one, against our Constitution, and it's a treasonous act by any of them that do. But if they fail to do this, AIPAC will give money and fund their opposition to get them deposed, or get them unelected. So, you know, I cannot overstate the amount of influence that Israel has in U.S. domestic and foreign policy. And this is what U.S. needs to cleanse itself of in order to at least be viewed as an honest broker. Right now, like I said, we're viewed as an Israeli puppet in order to help Israel accomplish their goals, period.
Now, Catherine, Palestinians have been holding weekly peaceful rallies within the context of what is called the Great March of Return. Israeli forces have used live bullets, they have used tear gas, snipers, to silence the protesters. Why should Israel enjoy impunity, and why should the international community not be able to hold it accountable for all these crimes?
I think your guest actually explained it. As, you know, Israel has a very powerful lobby, and of course, because the U.S. has a veto right at the United Nations, then it has protected Israel with all its might, and has done so since the very inception of the State of Israel. You know, Palestinians are coming up against a monster, literally, in that, you know, when it comes to international law, human rights law, or anything else in between, they do not stand a chance to plead their case, even though state officials are very aware of the fact that violations and crimes against humanity are being committed on a daily basis against Palestinians. There is nothing they can do per se in terms of enacting the law and thus hold Israel responsible for the crime it's committing, because of the U.S. veto, because of the very powerful lobby that the Israeli have, not just in the U.S., but as well in Canada and, of course, in the U.K. and beyond that, the EU. It's very difficult to operate in a system that is rigged from the get-go. It is meant to defend the criminal, and I'm, of course, referring to Tel Aviv. So, you know, the only recourse that Palestinians have really is to appeal to the public and actually educate the public in understanding what is it that is truly happening and how justice has been literally stolen away from them. And to hope to somehow manifest a movement, a liberation movement that will be powerful enough to actually force state officials to uphold the law. But again, it's very difficult. And, you know, a lot of the time, I think that, you know, Palestinians are very well aware of the fact that even though they need to operate within international law and thus go to the UN and try to play within the system, ultimately their liberation will come from within and in their armed struggle against Israel. Because what is it that you do against someone that is willing to kill your children in the dead of the night? You know, the only recourse that you have is actually resist. And armed resistance has become, I would say, a birthright when it comes to Palestine, because there is nothing else that they could do or should do. Their life is literally on the line. So I think that, you know, people need to be very careful when they relay to the Palestinian struggle and advocate peace all the time. Peace is sometimes very useful, but in the case of Palestinians, I think that the only way forward is to arm resistance, because mm-hmm. they need to protect their future. And in this case, their children are literally being killed on a daily basis by the Israeli soldiers.
Okay, we'll get to that point later, Seja. Also, let me go to Mike, and Mike, consider the situation in Gaza. The Hamas rule to Gaza Strip has been suffering from an all-out Israeli siege for years now. Many who have visited the coastal strip, they call it the largest open-air prison. Now, what do you think can put an end to the plight of the people in Gaza?
Boy, that is really the question we're all looking forward to. It's going to take a change of the paradigm of Israeli thought, because the Israelis have got to stop looking at the Palestinians as animals to be slaughtered. And that's what their view is. There is a large move to try to eliminate the Palestinian population in Gaza. There is no freedom there. They cut them off from food. They cut them off from water, medicine, fuel, everything, to try to make their lives as miserable as possible. And if Israel really wanted peace instead of, you know, ethnically cleansing the area, they would take a different approach. But it appears that Israel's goals are not for peace, but truly are for ethnic cleansing. And I don't know how to get the Israelis to change. They have to change themselves from within. There's nothing I would like to see more than Israel make some true efforts in order to bring peace to the region, to their country. But Israel seems preoccupied with expansion and with domination and with the elimination of this Palestinian vermin that are inhabiting their what they consider to be their land.
Mm-hmm. Now let's go to London to Catherine. With President Trump declaring Jerusalem al-Quds as the Israeli capital, and also, you know, he also cut aid to Palestinians, he took some other measures. Now, Palestinians no more trust Washington as a disinterested mediator in the talks with Israelis. Mike also referred to this. Who can the Palestinians put their trust in? Who is able to really? Can the UN, for example, do that?
No, I don't think so. And again, for the very reason that I explained before, is that the U.S. will systematically veto whatever decision the UN will do and will therefore render it completely irrelevant. So it's very difficult. I mean, of course, like I said before, the Palestinians are, of course, still committed to playing the game as far as the international community is concerned, because they need to have a platform, you know, and hopefully to lobby enough, you know, support to their cause to make a real change. But I think that primarily now what they're trying to do is just remain in the course, I mean, they're in the race. They're very aware of the fact that the Israel lobby will block every attempt to progress, essentially. I think that what we need to understand at this stage is that, again, if things need to change, if dynamics need to change, they need to change from, you know, from within the Palestinian mind, I would say, and maybe a greater unity in terms of, you know, how resistance should come about. And I think that regional dynamics will, you know, because now they are changing quite a great deal, will help Palestinians in the sense that, you know, from Lebanon to Syria, Iraq, and beyond that, you know, with Yemen, There is a greater, I think, formulation of what resistance can look like and should look like in terms of affirming political self-determination for nations. And so I think that this ultimately will help formulate a way forward for Palestinians against Israel, because Israel is by default being isolated by the very nature of its policies and the fact that it continued to advocate, you know, military interventionism as far as the US is concerned, and continue to sow discord within the region. And this has worked against its favor, essentially. Just look at Syria, what is happening in Jordan as well. There is an awakening happening in the region that is against Israel, again, by the very nature of its idea, which is, again, that nations have a right not only to their sovereignty, but actually decide their own future, you know, beyond imperialism. And I think this is very important. So I would say that a solution could very well come from the region and not anymore from the West. We need to understand that this this power dynamic that we had so far, where Western capitals were essentially dictating the tone in the Middle East and in Asia, is over now. I mean, we have seen this time and time again over the past few years, how, for example, countries such as Iran have actually, or Russia, have enabled a country to become, to assert themselves as, you know, sovereign entities and actually define their own future and carve it for themselves. This will happen, I think, more and more now. And this will help ultimately Palestine. And I think it will work against Israel to the point where it might actually tumble to the ground, because, you know, without America's support, Israel is non-existent, essentially. So it would be interesting to see, as America becomes more isolated, and that Saudi Arabia is losing relevance in the region, how Israel is actually not only very much alone, but has no foot to stand on at all.
Mm-hmm. Now back to St. Louis. Mike Harris, let me put the same question to you. Who can Palestinians trust in terms of actually reaching out to them and trying to address the problem, the conflict they have with the Israelis?
Well, I think that they need to reach out to the Iranians first and foremost. The Iranians seem to be their last best hope as far as finding a strong ally, a regional ally that can support them. There was a time when many of us believed that Saudi Arabia might have been a good hope for the Palestinians, but the Saudis seem to have sold out to Israel and have become part of the Israeli camp. You know, this is extremely unfortunate, but as Catherine said, Israel is doing its best to isolate itself. Israelis themselves have said that Israel must be viewed as a rabid dog in order to put fear into their neighbors and to put fear into everyone so that they can be safe and expand their agenda. Well, what does any sane person do with a rabid dog is you shoot it in the head. And that is the path that Israel is putting itself on, to where regionally they're going to be not just isolated but reviled, and if their belligerence and their genocidal ways expand beyond Gaza and into the rest of the region, Israel is going to bite off more than it can chew, and they're going to be crushed. And as Catherine said, without the support of the U.S., Israel would last about 15 minutes on its own. They would be done.
Mm-hmm. Of course, Iran, without doing anything, Iran is being accused of, you know, destabilizing the region, and they got no proof like what Iran is doing to Yemen. Anyway, let's go to Catherine. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu recently took a tour of Arab nations in order to normalize relations with them. Now, this year's anniversary of Hamas, Hania urged perpetuation of resistance and stopping normalization of relations with Israel. What makes Arab Muslim states stand with Israel instead of standing with their Palestinian brothers and sisters?
Financial self-interest. I mean, we need to make there's a big difference in between, you know, Arab leadership and actually the Arab people, because I think there's a dichotomy there, where the Arab people are not actually in agreement with, you know, normalization with Israel at all whatsoever. It's not something that they ever wanted, and I don't think that even in the very far future they would ever want. It runs against everything that they are. Now, when it comes to the governments, you know, it's very different. It's very different for state officials. For example, in Saudi Arabia, Prince Mohammed bin Salman was quite happy to befriend, Prime Minister Netanyahu and, you know, Tel Aviv clique. The same goes for many Arab capitals as far as governments are concerned. Again, because of the money that they're being offered, because of the friendship that the US is, of course, extending to them, in relation to the acceptance of Israel and, of course, military contracts and everything else that goes with it. So for them, it makes sense because they're becoming very, very rich, they're becoming very, very powerful, and they can secure their political, I would say, legacy in the sense that they are promised that they would be able to stay in their position just as long as they support Israel and make Washington happy.
Okay.
Now, I think that this view is flawed, essentially, because, you know, it's not in alignment with their people's wishes, and ultimately, you know, legitimacy is with the people. So if they continue to run against what the people want, they stand the risk of actually being ousted.
Now, we're running short of time. One quick question and 30 seconds, each of you, please. So what's the solution to the Israeli-Palestinian age-old conflict? Resistance or negotiations? 30 seconds. Mike, please.
Both. Once Israel realizes that they cannot break the Palestinian people, that no matter how harsh and punitive they become in their approach, they're going to have to take a different view of things, because the rest of the world will not stand by and allow the rabid dog of Israel to destroy and genocide an entire people. So the Palestinian people have to stand tough, they have to have resolve, they have to resist, and that resistance is what will get Israel to negotiate once they realize they cannot win.
All right, Catherine, 30 seconds.
I would say resistance first and then negotiation from a point of strength, because this is the only way that Israel will actually hear Palestinians from a point of strength. And I think this is the way that Hamas is going, and this is what Palestinians want for themselves, and it will happen ultimately.
Okay. And with this, we come to the end of our debate today. Let me thank our guests who joined us. We had Mike Harris, editor of Veterans Today, who joined us from St. Louis, and also Catherine Schachtman, fellow with Bayan Center for Strategic Studies, joining us from London. And also thank you for joining us in this debate. We'll see you soon.